The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. This is the Hervoy Moritz Show. On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, hour two, we got Tom Luongo coming up in a bit. Again, feel free to dial in. Phone lines are open. Their posted numbers are posted to the top of TNTRadio.live. And some noticias out in Spain. They are replacing olive trees with solar panels. How do you like sustainable development? And the rural Spain is rising up against the robots. You remember that X-Files movie, Fight the Future? I mean, this is crazy. And in Europe, you know, my home, Croatia, Greece, you know, Spain, olive trees, olive oils are a big deal. Super healthy, you know, for your diet, for your health. And solar panels, yeah, absolutely crazy. But it's, they're destroying the environment in the name of saving the environment. I mean, total 2 + 2 = 5. I had to laugh out loud when I saw this news. I'm actually happy. Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, exiled Belarus opposition leader, sentenced to 15 years in absentia. She fled Belarus in 2020 after running against, this is BBC News, says, quote, authoritarian leader Alexander Lukashenko in presidential elections. She's widely thought to have won, according to the U.S., you know, government and Bellingcat and all these garbage think tanks linked to the, you know, NATO. The charges included high treason and conspiracy to seize power. So it's the female version of Juan Guaido. But I mean, looking at it objectively, Svetlana, in if I put myself in her shoes, I would consider myself a traitor to my country of Belarus. You know, here I am. I mean, it's like the traitors that occupy office in my other homeland of Croatia, like Plenković and the mayor of Zagreb, Tomašević, who was brought in by Soros. It's like, if I'm a Belarusian, but I'm being installed by these foreign powers to do their bidding, what kind of Belarusian are you? I mean, you're a total traitor. You're selling out your country. And that's what I mean. I mean, you don't want these people near power in your country. So good that Svetlana was kicked out. She's a traitor. You can say what you want about Lukashenko. That's a separate subject. But as a Belarusian, I would not want U.S. NATO-sponsored Svetlana running my country. So good riddance. And just the picture of her makes me nauseous. And we had also a report that in, again, they tried to pull another Daria Dugina. The Russian FSB said it prevented an assassination attempt against Konstantin Malofiev, the founder of the Russian Orthodox TV network Tsargrad. The FSB claimed neo-Nazi Denis Kapustin claimed responsibility for organization claimed responsibility for last week's incursion into Russia's Bryansk region from Ukraine, which the Russians called, you know, Medvedev and Lavrov called the terrorist sabotage. That they had planned to blow up Malofiev's car, but that the attempt was thwarted. So it's interesting now how they're trying to assassinate different figures in Russian society, from Alexander Dugin's daughter to now the founder of Russian Orthodox TV network. That's pretty, it's pretty crazy. I mean, that wouldn't that, under the Geneva Conventions, that would qualify as, you know, a war crime. I studied under Curtis Dobler, Dutch-American human rights lawyer who defended Saddam Hussein. I think I know a little bit. I visited the ICRC in Geneva, right across from my school. They're going after non-combatants. I mean, what is this? If you're in a war, you go after, you know, military installations, but going after, I listened to Dugin's interview in RT last night. Dugina had nothing to do. She had no aspect. She was just a lady giving out her personal views. She had nothing to do with the war at all. So she was a non-combatant. And just, you know, more dystopian news. In the UK, I guess they've got this Orwellian, I mean, Ministry of Truth, Ofcom, and they found Mark Stein's program of GB News in breach of broadcasting rules, specifically the program that they refer to GB News, which aired April 21st, 2022, a year ago, 11 months ago. They say specifically the program incorrectly claimed that official UK HSA data provided definitive evidence of a causal link between receiving a third Pentagon juice injection, I mean COVID-19 vaccine, and higher infection, hospitalization, and death rates. I mean, this is the policing of speech. And I think he quit. You know, he was facing like a 40,000 pound fine. I mean, this is total tyranny. Now, this is the last thing. They're criminalizing speech globally now. And, you know, Pat Wood, who I interviewed, who referenced Matt Desmiet, that said, once they criminalize and eliminate free, speech, that's when the killing begins, the gulags, the camps. And so, you know, maybe that's the last stage. And then they're going to all send us to the COVID camps, in our respective regions, you know, US, Australia, New Zealand. So, all right. Anyways, crazy times. Give us a big help, on the socials, Big Tech and Alt Tech. Don't forget Alt Tech. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, TNT Radio on Twitter. We're slowly growing there, almost on our way to 5,000 on Twitter. Instagram, Gab Getter, YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on TNT Radio.
Trusted coverage you can count on.
They are a reliable source.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has branded a string of suspected schoolgirl poisonings an unforgivable crime, calling for the perpetrators to be put to death should they ever be caught. Here with the full story, joining me again is TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
Thank you, Havari. The leader made these remarks on the sidelines of a ceremony on Monday marking Iran's National Tree Planting Day, as reported by RT, after planting a sapling on the premises of his office in Tehran, branding the alleged poisonings a heinous and unforgivable crime. Khamenei urged authorities to investigate the poisonings with utmost seriousness. He said, quote, "If the poisoning of students is proven, perpetrators should face maximum punishment with no pardon," end quote. Iran has been plagued by a string of mysterious what are being described as poisonings since last November, with the apparent attacks occurring at more than 50 schools across the country. RT here says that more than 1,000 schoolgirls have been affected by the poisonings, triggering protests by parents and prompting some to take their children out of school altogether. However, Fox News, quoting a CBS report, it's like the telephone game, says it's more than 400 schoolgirls in 21 provinces across the country, with some politicians placing blame on religious extremist groups who are opposed to girls' education. Either way, little information is known about how the poisonings happened or whether they were deliberate, and Iran has no previous history of religious extremists targeting female education, according to Fox. Iranian Interior Minister Ahmed Vahidi has alluded to authorities gathering quote-unquote suspicious samples from some of the schools, though he did not elaborate on what was found and instead urged the public to remain calm while accusing enemies of the regime of attempting to spread fear. Let's see. Last week, President Ebrahim Raisi, according to RT, suggested the poisonings might have been carried out by the country's enemies, conspiring, quote, to create fear and despair in the people, end quote, and urged the Interior Ministry and intelligence groups to ramp up efforts in apprehending those responsible. RT goes on to report earlier, the Deputy Health Minister, Yuanis Panahi, suggested hardline religious groups who oppose women's education might have had a hand in the affair. He commented without elaborating, quote, "It was found that some people wanted schools, especially girls' schools, to be closed." Going back to Fox, parents took to social media to post photos of schoolgirls in emergency rooms with IVs in their arms, with the girls complaining of headaches, heart palpitations, shortness of breath, nausea, vertigo, and feeling lethargic, symptoms which have easily been classified as coronavirus not that long ago, I might add. Others have described smelling tangerines, chlorine, or cleaning agents. One schoolgirl recounted, according to CBS, quote, "A very bad smell suddenly spread. I got dizzy and I fell to the ground," end quote. Interesting. Reports of attacks continued over the weekend, with one student complaining she, quote, "felt nausea and intense pain in the chest," end quote, and that her legs were numb after a suspected attack. One emergency doctor at a hospital in the western city of Bourgeois, where one of these suspected attacks took place, said that, quote, "most of the students suffered symptoms such as headaches, respiratory problems, lethargy, nausea, and hypotension," end quote. These attacks come amid months of protests over the death in police custody of Mahsa Amini, who was arrested for being found in violation of the country's head covering laws. Some of those protests have been joined by schoolgirls, with New York-based Iranian-American activist Mahsa Ahmadinejad saying the girls were now, quote-unquote, paying the price for their outspoken behavior. Taking to Twitter, Ahmadinejad said, quote, "now the girls of Iran are paying the price for fighting against the compulsory hijab and have been poisoned by the government," end quote. So you can kind of see where that's going. What do you think about this, Rory?
I mean, call me a tinfoil hatter, but my spidey sense, or whatever you call it, I can't help but just view all of this as Western, you know, instigation, provocation, because there are a few things I'm looking at, but it just seems like the West, the globalist American empire is trying to crack Iran any which way they can. You know, the holdouts that are remaining, like Syria, I was reading from this excellent, was a Pakistani analyst, Badra Kumar, I think, who was, you know, Mark Milley just went to Syria and just reaffirming they're not leaving Syria alone. And going back to Iran, you know, taking out Soleimani, Iranian general, these constant Israeli missiles and incursions, you know, the theory that COVID was a bioweapon being used against countries like China and Iran, most notably, you know, and these poisonings you mentioned, plus the sanctions and pressure. And one of the things that for me is a tip off, well, in this Fox report that you talk about, it says, again, one of these NGOs, Western-sponsored NGOs, National Council of Resistance of Iran, took aim at Khamenei's response, saying Khamenei has woken up and is looking for others to blame for poisoning schoolgirls in fear of an uprising. But there's no one to blame other than himself and the agencies and elements under his control. He must accept a visit by, of course, the UN investigative mission. But more and more, just in recent weeks, I'm seeing, and in this same article, they've inserted a recent interview with the exiled crown prince of Iran, Reza Pahlavi, whose father, the Shah, was brought in through Operation Ajax in 1953. You know, he's being featured here, and more, they're trotting out the Shah's son. And it's almost like they want to run Operation Ajax, you know, 2.0, and install the Shah's son. I mean, it's so cartoonish. Like, they don't have any newer ideas. Let's just do the same old, with the guy's son. I mean, how obvious does this have to be? And yeah, I'm not a supporter of the type of government they have in Iran, but I'm a supporter of the American ideals of democracy, liberty, and sovereignty, not overthrowing foreign countries. And so if I had to, I would just say this poisoning has something to do with the West, ruckus, in my opinion.
Yeah, thank God this is not nearly as terrible as what Saddam Hussein did, throwing those babies out of the incubators out of the window. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, at least it's not as bad as all those weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I sense a theme here going on for sure, dude. Yeah, I like your you. I think you nailed it. Would you call it provocation, propaganda? What was your word for it? It's great. It's perfect.
Yeah, and you know, I like how they refer to him as Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi. Crown Prince of what? He's living in the U.S. He's not crown prince of anything.
crown prince of his mom's basement, maybe.
I think of that Metallica song from the Load album, King Nothing, Crown Prince Nothing. And it's as he's discussing Iranians fighting for freedom against the regime and the path for a free and democratic Iran. Will it be free and democratic under a U.S. corporate regime where LGBT plus and trans is rainbow fascism is shoved down everyone's throats? So yeah, it's interesting how they're going to try to square that circle with Iran. Maybe they're just going to go back, you know, just to start World War III using Israel. Francis Boyle, the interview I did with him, says the end game is Iran, Russia, and China for what he calls this Western unlimited imperialism. They won't stop unless, you know, someone stops them or they just blow up the world. So that seems to be where we're headed. And thanks for improvising with me first hour, Ruckus. I'll catch up with you tomorrow. And we got Tom Luongo on the other side of this break.
Rick Munn on TNT Radio.
Birmingham University is offering free degree courses and up to £25,000 of living expenses to asylum seekers only. Okay, if you're from the UK and you're a taxpayer and you want your kids to go to Birmingham University and get a free education and free fees, no, forget about it. Asylum seekers only. And they have up to 5 scholarships available for the next academic year. So do the mathematics on that one. That's £125,000 of British taxpayers' money will be funding free education and free expenses for up to 5 asylum seekers in Aston University in Birmingham. Most students come out of university now with a big fat wad of debt sitting squarely between their shoulder blades that they have to slave and pay off over maybe a decade or two. Oh, not if you're an asylum seeker. It's free. Free. Yes. Why would you want to be a British resident?
Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
Like Bob Marley said,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
From big tech censorship to calling out government tyranny, TNT Radio has the guts to say what you're thinking and gives you the platform to be heard. Call the open line anytime in the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. In the U.K., call 033-024-1026. And in Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310.
Stand up for your right.
Free speech has a home on TNT Radio.
And I'm joined by Tom Luongo, former research chemist and financial political commentator specializing in the intersection of geopolitics, financial markets, gold, and crypto. He's producer of the popular Golds, Goats, and Guns blog and podcast. You can find all of his stuff at tomluongo.me. Sign up to his Patreon newsletter and donate to him on PayPal. I can't do either of those because I'm banned from Patreon and PayPal. And you can follow him on Twitter at TFL1728. Welcome back to TNT, Senor Luongo.
Good afternoon or evening, Roy. How you been?
I'm doing all right. How's life for you? How's Florida doing?
Oh, Florida's fine. It's, you know, it's starting to warm up. It's March, so I actually had to turn the air conditioner on this afternoon. But other than that, you know, goats are having kids. You know, the world keeps spinning. We haven't been nuked yet. Like, I, you know, we're okay, I guess. You know, I'm not gonna tell you. Like, it's every day. It's the same thing. So.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, it's right now, just, you know, as you mentioned here in Mexico, it's starting to get hot, and I'm gonna have to buy and install an air conditioner. And by the way, you from my assessment, you seem to be doing extremely well. I think you're killing it. I see you all over the place now. I'm stealing some of your guests. I had Chris Sullivan on of Hyperion Decimus the other week.
Nice.
So, how's Gold Goats and Guns doing?
We're doing great. I mean, you know, just I can't complain about the growth rate or anything along those lines. It's you know, it's really humbling, dude. Are you kidding? Like, you know, the idea that I'm able to do this, or my partner Dexter White and I are able to do this as a living is a great thing. It was not that way for a long time when you and I first met. So, always happy to do your show. It's funny. I was thinking the other day, I'm like, I haven't heard from her way in a while. Interesting. And then, you know, like literally 24 hours later, like I get the email from you. I'm like, yep, we're doing this. So glad to be here.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to do it in cycles. I try not to bother my guests too much. You know, I have someone on like once or twice a year, and I don't like to bugger people. And yeah, I know you've been on TNT before. It's the first time you're on my TNT show. And maybe to start with geopolitics, you know, get see where your head's at on the whole East versus West dialectic, you know, new Cold War 2.0, multipolarity being born, you just alluded to, you know, World War III scenario. Where are you at on this one?
Well, I have to say, listening to the last segment while I was waiting in the back room, I'm going to steal rainbow fascism, by the way. That's just brilliant. And I think it's all part of what they're trying to do to us. I think it's very clear. I mean, I've been beating this dead horse or flogging this dead horse for years now. I think it's the longer I watch this play out, it's very clear what the factions are, who's trying to push for what. The thing I want to preface before I get started is that it's all a lot more complicated and at the same time a lot simpler than everybody wants to make it out to be. There are multiple factions running around here. The US is not a monolith, Europe is not a monolith, China is not a monolith, Russia is not a monolith, right? Iran's not a monolith, right? There are, you know, independent factions within each of these countries. All, you know, some of whom are ideologically aligned across each, you know, the transgress border. So, you know, it's like, but at the same time, it's really easy to just get bogged down in going, well, it's the US versus the rest of the world and blah, blah, blah. And I just don't see it that way. I think that there are aspects of, you know, the American plutocracy, they're all in for the Great Reset and, you know, frog marching us or into, you know, Klaus's perfect, more perfect technocratic union. And I think that there are others that aren't on board with this. And I believe that it's true in Europe as well. Even though I complain about them all the time, you know, it's very clear that there are people in the United States that are not happy with what's going on. And I think that the dividing line is not, it goes back to everything that, you know, Lee Stranahan and Garland and I used to talk about all those years ago when I was on Fault Lines with them, which is that it's really not about left versus right. It's about, you know, populism versus authority. And it's about the people versus the government. And I think that that's where we are. Our leaders have lost any sight or any care whatsoever about what it is that we want anybody of this. This is all their power game and we're just their playthings. So I think Davos is, you know, what I call Davos is, you know, trying desperately to kind of hold on to their vision of the future while they're getting serious pushback from where I see it, which is within the U.S. financial markets and attendant and the downstream effects of that. Whereas at the same time, you know, the neoconservatives that go all the way back to, you know, the British Crown and, you know, MI6 and, you know, the formation of the CIA and the OSS and all of this stuff, those guys, they all have had it in for Russia for, you know, multiple generations. And So everybody's kind of like running around in the vacuum or the chaos that's been engendered by this push for a new world order. And I think, you know, I think the best way I put it years ago was that, you know, the Wicked Witch is dead and the flying monkeys are running around. And it all just is really scary because you just don't know who's actually got control of anything. And I don't think anybody has control over anything. And that's actually scarier than anything. And I think you can hear that when you listen to the diplomats from the East talk. Right? When you listen to Lavrov talk, when you listen to Putin talk, even when you listen to Xi Jinping talk or the Iranians or anybody, they're all saying the same thing. Like, what's wrong with you people? Like, what are you doing? And speaking to the West, and I think it's very clear that they don't, in so many ways, they don't know what they're doing. And they don't know who, and you know, the Putin and Lavrov and company don't know who to talk to. There's nobody to talk to, really. Because there's nobody in the United States is willing to talk because they're all on this, you know, this grand crusade. Or the ones who are willing to talk don't have any ability to make any substantive change in the policy. Yeah, and so we get rid of certain people, and those certain people are all like stabbed all the way through the Biden administration. And then you got to ask yourself the question, who put them there? Because we know, it wasn't Joe Biden, right? So who put Joe Biden in office? And that's who put Samantha Power and Victoria Nuland and Jake Sullivan and Anthony Blinken and the rest of these freaking morons. You know, these insane people.
Like, yeah, I mean, you sort of read my mind. That was one of my questions. And, you know, we're on the same frequency. So you anticipated it. But, you know, I did want to mention that rainbow fascism, I believe, comes from Jim Jattras, who I've interviewed.
Oh, God, really? That's hilarious. So
I think he's the one. I think he's the one who came up with rainbow fascism, and I've been rolling with it since. So to give credit to it. He's hardcore. And so, Tom, we're going to have to jump to our news update. We'll be right back.
Now, TNT Radio News.
I have huge news.
Are you ready for it?
Yeah. Do it.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Iran has pledged to restore cameras and other monitoring equipment at its nuclear sites and to allow more inspections at a facility where particles of uranium enriched to near weapons grade were recently detected. At least 11 people have died in the Indonesian region of Natuna on Monday after a landslide buried houses amid heavy rainfall. The Unite Union has called off planned ambulance strikes in England in order to enter pay talks with the UK government.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
And we are back with Tom Luongo of Gold Goats and Guns. You can check out his podcast where he's got fantastic guests and subscribe to his monthly newsletter. I think it's $12 through Patreon or PayPal, tomluongo.me. And just what you were mentioning, I'm posting constantly on Telegram and Twitter, finding these clips of Lavrov at the G20. And it's the Global South in general, like African leaders, pushing back against most recently some German minister, and they're mouthing off now. They're putting the West in their place, and I've never seen this before. I mean,
yeah, me either. No, the leader of what, South Sudan, stood up on a podium with Macron of France and just basically told him, stop treating us like children. This paternalistic attitude that you have is no longer acceptable. And Macron tried to like be all paternalistic, and the guy just like shouted him down. Like in public, like I'm like, you know, I posted it to my Twitter feed about 3 or 4 hours ago. It's the ever shrinking Macron. Like I was like, cool. I couldn't believe it. Right. It's great. I think it's the best thing we've seen yet. Hawaii. And, you know, it's funny. I remember the day that Putin moved into Syria. Right. September 30th, 2015. And I remember writing about that then. I was writing for Newsmax at the time. So I was, you know, everything I was writing back then was behind the paywall. over at the newsletter. I was writing for Newsmax at the time. But I remember telling my editor, I don't know if this actually made it into the issue or not. And I know I wrote about it later when I started blogging over at my current blog, right? And when I started that again, I was between stints with Newsmax. I'm back with them now, doing a different newsletter. But back then, I remember arguing with my editor, and I told her, I said, you have to realize this is the most important geopolitical event of the decade so far, because if Putin is successful here, he will be the first country to physically stand up to the United States and to effectively NATO, who, you know, moved in and destroyed Syria. And this is going to wake a lot of people up, and it's going to give voice to the voiceless. And at what I said at the time, spine to the spineless. Like, everybody kowtows to the bully until the bully gets a bloody nose. And Syria was the first real bloody nose, along with Crimea. But it was that moment for me that was really galvanizing, because then it really started to expose the lies of the West. Because we sat there all through 2015 going, we can't stop ISIS. I don't know what's going on, but there's no way for us to stop ISIS. They're just too powerful. And then, you know, Putin and 42 planes like walk in and level the place and completely change the narrative in like 6 weeks. And I told my editor, this is what's going to happen. And she's like, no, that's never going to happen. Like, it is. And everybody's going to stand up and take notice. And
And just on that of Putin and Ukraine at this juncture, just to get your thoughts, because, you know, the Russians may succeed or they may not succeed. Yeah. Some talk about escalation to World War III. I mean, where do you think we are and where we might be going, and then what it would mean, you know, once all the dust is settled?
No, it's a very complicated question. And it's one that, remember, I've been sympathetic to the Russians for a long time. I've been accused of being a Putin shill. And like, you know, if that's the case, like, Mr. Putin, you know, like, the paychecks just aren't big enough, man. Like, you know, like, I gotta make ends meet here. And I'm kidding, by the way. That's complete. Yeah. It's complete sarcasm. I don't work for the Russians. But here's what I think, and I'm going to be very Missouri about this. You know, here in the United States, you know, Missouri is known as the show me state. I want to see, and I believe that the Russians have the ability to wipe out the Ukrainians. I think they already, for the most part, have, if, you know, most of the reports are even half true, right? Did it cost Russia a lot? Yes. Did we find out about a lot of corruption within the Russian military? Yes. Did Putin find out a lot about what his actual capabilities are? Yes. And they aren't as impressive as we may have thought a year ago. That doesn't mean they're going to lose, right? And I think it's very hard for people who are sympathetic to Russia, because they understand just how evil the leadership in the West has become. They want to root for Russia, right? From that perspective. And we've gotten a lot of pushback, both Dexter and myself have gotten a lot of pushback, but just saying, look, you know, we're going to just call it as we see it and not cheerlead here. Like, the Russians are doing their propaganda, the Ukrainians are clearly doing theirs, NATO is clearly doing this. And, you know, sure, the Ukrainian and Western propaganda is far cruder than the Russian propaganda is. But that isn't to say that the Russians are, you know, haven't gotten their nose bloody. Do I think they have the ability to wipe out Ukraine's military? I think they've already done a very credible job of that. The bigger question is, do they have the ability, if NATO decides to step in for reals, not the way they've been kind of helping to prop up the Ukrainians here and there, but really step in with air cover, with. Can the Russians stand up to that? There's a lot of people out there, you know, beating the Russian, their Russian chest, saying, yes, they can. I'm not convinced of that. Now, that's not to say that I'm not unwilling to be convinced. I just haven't seen it yet. Now, are the Russians holding stuff in reserve? Probably. I don't know. But until, you know, given what we've seen so far, they're very good at this kind of attrition-style industrial warfare. They always have been. It's Russian military doctrine going back 100 years. So, not surprised. And, you know, it's probably the war they had to fight at this point, which was, in effect, sucker Ukraine into, you know, fighting this disgusting, you know, grinding up of, you know, humanity in central Donbass. Because you know, Zelensky and the West won't back down. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I also see it from the other side, which is that the longer this goes on, some people certainly in Washington, they think that the longer this goes on, the worse this is for Putin. I've been making the argument since the day this thing started that Putin is going to do to Ukraine what he did to the U.S. and the Turks in Syria. She's going to attrition them out, going to take over the territory, and then slowly but surely just grind them out and just make it too expensive for them to continue going and wait for the rest of the other verticals, the other theaters of this war, the financial, the political, whatnot, and let that take its toll on everybody. Because the attrition war here is not on just on the battlefield. It's in the financial markets. It's in the political realm. You know, it's in all of it. And in every way, I think Russia's winning that war. But that doesn't mean that the next stage of this is, oh, okay, now you got us backed into a corner. And these are the very evil people that we're talking about here. Davos is desperate to escalate this. The neocons are desperate to win. What are they going to do if they're a cornered animal? That's what we have to be worried about. I'm sure that the Russians, the Chinese, and the Iranians have this game plan, but you know, we still have to think about it in those terms.
Yeah, and if we go back to Napoleon's, I think you nailed it when you said the attrition warfare, you know, they've been doing for a century. Go back to Napoleon. I mean, they won against Napoleon. They won against Hitler. And given the historical record, I mean, twice consecutively, they've won. So, you know, they very well might do it again. And hey, I've lived in former Soviet Union with Russians, and they're tough. They're much tougher than us, you know, snowflakes in the West. And so, you know, at least as of right now,
and I'll say, you know, given what we had in, you know, given who fought World War II for the United States, you know, mm-hmm. that generation is different.
Yeah. And as Rocky said, you know, Stallone's character, I think is not how many punches you can take. And that's what they're really good at. And just to get back to the Great Reset agenda briefly, getting your thoughts on what you were alluding to earlier. You know, two things came to mind for me are ESG and CBDCs, mm-hmm. which at the end of the day are linked. It's part of the same program. But
sure.
I've been reading that we're seeing, especially in Republicans pushing back and unheard today just published an article saying that they're having some success. I think Louisiana, I think Missouri, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. other states that are just pulling their funding from like BlackRock. And I think I read the head of Vanguard or something was admitting.
Yeah, the head of Vanguard said the other day that they're going to be making they're going to be shifting their portfolio. Look, ESG, there was a good article on Zero Hedge today with a great title. And I skimmed part of it that just said like ESG is the final product of, you know, 15 years of ZERP or something like that. And ZERP being it's zero bound interest rate policy. I always thought that it's like, look, dumb ideas. When money is free, dumb ideas proliferate. Okay. When money is free, not dumb ideas don't just proliferate, they multiply. And they're like, you know, a yeast in Allen, for Christ's sake. And it's crazy, right? It's like, it's when money becomes not free, when R star really isn't equal to zero, when, you know, we're looking at a Fed funds rate of 5% and probably by the end of the year, 6 or even 7%. And I'm still one of the few people calling for 7% on the Fed funds rate. These ideas don't cut it. Like solar at zero bound is barely, you know, profitable. At 7%, it's not. Electric vehicles at 7%, are you kidding? No. When money is that expensive, no. And money is going to get that expensive, if not more expensive. And, you know, to the you and me, like, you know, your mortgages are going to be 11%, 12%. You know, the idea of a 30-year mortgage is like, you know, if money returns to a, you know, if money returns to its proper cost in order to lay off the future risk, we should go back. We should, you know, never even consider the idea of a 30-year mortgage, which was only created by Fannie and Freddie back by during the New Deal fight from FDR. Mortgages were never 30 years. It's insane. So only when the government subsidized them did we get the 30-year mortgage. Mortgages should be 10 or 15 years and nothing more. Car loans should be 3 years because, you know, cars last 6 to 8. So, you know, it's like all of this. This is, and ESGS is another one of these things. And so is most of the Green New Deal. This is why they keep talking about needing hundreds of trillions of dollars to spend on infrastructure and remaking the world economy to make it safe for communism, for Christ's sake. And worse, European communism. It's not even like Russian or Chinese communism, which is unbelievable. These people are crazy. And I'm like, this is why I keep banging my shoe on the table, like Khrushchev, saying the Fed is not raising interest rates to fight inflation. The Fed is raising interest rates to bring cost back to the real economy and make people and put risk assessment back into the hands of the people who are putting their capital at risk and not just borrowing it for free from the Fed and then socializing the losses. Like that has to end. And, you know, for the Federal Reserve, if it wants to survive in any way, if they want the dollar to survive, which is their primary product, by the way, then they have to do this. There is no pivot on the horizon. It doesn't matter how much pain there is, because with the East de-dollarizing at the rate that they are, because of the political insanity of the aforementioned Biden and Nuland and Sullivan and Soros and all the rest of them, like, they have no other choice. Because when you raise the cost of using dollars, the reason the dollar took over the world, it was the cheapest currency to use. Like, in terms of, you know, once it got critical mass around the world, it just became cheap to do business in dollars. That's why everybody does business in dollars. You start raising the cost of doing business in dollars because, oh, we wagged our finger at you because you didn't behave. Well, I got news for you. Eventually, everybody gives us two fingers up and goes, you know what? I can use the yuan. Yeah, I can do that. I can use something else. I can gasp. I could use gold. And we can. And now that we have the, you know, all this lovely blockchain and tokenization technology, we could even tokenize the gold. So you don't actually want any of these ideas really propagating if you're Jerome Powell and your Jamie Dimon and your John Solomon over at Goldman Sachs and you don't want that. You want the dollar to survive, and there's only one way that's going to happen, and that is to force the cost of money, and that includes the money for war, by the way, to the stratosphere, which then turns Congress into nothing but a debt servicing body, because they have no other money left over but to service the existing debt. And that's a good thing, because then they stop spending money on dumb stuff. We're really good at spending money on dumb stuff.
Yeah, that the thing that comes to mind, I read a couple months back, the U.S. it was the State Department sent 20,000 to Ecuador to run these transgender events and for children or something. So, I mean, they just
rainbow fascism.
Rainbow
zero bound interest rates give us is rainbow fascism, right?
Making the world safe for rainbow fascism. And I got a couple questions from listeners I'd like to ask you. We're going to jump to our break. Again, Tom's website is tomluongo.me. You can check out his Gold, Goats, and Guns podcast and newsletter, and find him on Twitter at TFL1728. And if you want to call in, the phone numbers are up at tntradio.live. We'll be right back on TNT.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
America is rudderless, at risk of being swept away by a globalist tide of woke corporatism. Everyone knows that Joe Biden isn't running the country, and he most certainly isn't leading it. Indeed, the menagerie of freaks, geeks, and misfits that he's assembled in Washington, D.C. are driving the country farther away from the shores of sanity than it ever has been before. Fortunately, we are not bereft of leaders, or should I say leader, because only one man is standing head and shoulders above every politician, poser, and psychopathic panty waste. That man, of course, is Donald John Trump, 45th and soon to be 47th president of the United States. In a raucous two-hour speech that brought down the House at CPAC on Saturday, Trump laid out a clear vision not only for the Republican Party, but for America and the world. After another 2 years of Democrats showing people exactly who and what they are, there's no amount of cheating that's going to keep President Trump from taking the helm and bringing us back into harbor. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. If you've taken meth, don't drive for at least 24 hours. Even the smallest amount detected will cost your license. Drug drive and you'll get caught long after the high is gone. Think road safety. A message from the Government of South Australia.
The conversation continues.
I don't believe it, and I think that's a terrible position that I am in, that I don't trust my government.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're on our final segment with Tom Luongo of Gold Goats and Guns. He's got a podcast, blog, free articles he puts out, as well as a monthly newsletter you can subscribe to for the price of two Starbucks, tomluongo.me. And he's all over the place. He's, I think, at the Duran, on Peter Lavelle's, what is it called, Crosstalk. I see you all over the place. And I got a question from, maybe you know her, I don't know, Holly from Wesley Chapel, Florida. But I'm going to try to throw in my question as well. She writes, sure. What happens if they crash the economy, and rather than CBDCs, states issue their own currency? Do you see this as a viable option to get off their system? What if the EU disbands? Would countries go back to their previous currencies? And my question is more on CBDCs, because there's two camps now, people who sort of see them as inevitable and us moving into this dystopian system, but others that say, you know, Alistair MacLeod and I think Mark Yeftovich perhaps, or others that say, think that CBDCs won't work or they'll fall apart. And so what's your take here?
Well, there's two things here. In Europe's case, the Davos is clearly trying to force the United States into some kind of civil war, separation, whatever, and fake opposition like Marjorie Taylor Greene are pushing for this. I don't trust her as far as I can throw her. When you're sleeping with the friggin' rhino speaker of the house, like, I can't, you know, sorry, like, it's pretty obvious. I can't trust her or take her very seriously. That's clearly what they want. And there's a rush for that. But at the same time, we're trying to push through the Federal Reserve and the death of the Eurodollar markets. I think the potential destruction of the European Union is very, very possible, certainly, but by the end of the decade. And yes, in that respect, in Europe, states would absolutely go back. Countries would absolutely go back to their own currencies, or at least the ones that leave the Eurozone will. They could do so. It would be the easiest way for countries, for example, like Italy and Spain and Greece and whatnot, to actually become competitive again. It's why, of course, they're, you know, the usual suspects are doing everything imaginable to ensure that they don't get out from underneath the fold. But as far as CBDCs are concerned, there's a couple of things to talk about. One, as long as Jerome Powell is FOMC chair, there will not be a retail CBDC, even pilot projected or, you know, workshopped by the Federal Reserve. It's literally still at the, you know, the graduate student, you know, term paper level. Okay, that's where it is within the Fed. As Daniel DiMartino Booth said it to me a couple of weeks ago, over Powell's dead body, not happening. Okay. Now, a wholesale CBDC to replace SWIFT and to compete with things like Bitcoin and the other wholesale blockchain style or digital systems that are being built in the East to make payments cheaper, like I talked about earlier. Absolutely. So a lot of boogeyman talk about CBDCs, because, and rightfully so, because who wants to live with programmable money where Christine Lagarde can tell you that you're not allowed to have a pizza because she thinks you're fat? Like, who elected Christine Lagarde to run my life? Nobody. Like, you know, so, and I'm sure that Chrissy's next door scarf gets all you know, a Twitter, whenever, a flutter whenever I say something like that. But, you know, sorry, Chrissy, not happening. Now, so I'm, and at the same time, where they've tried to implement CBDC so far, you know, Nigeria failed. So they had to cancel the currency to try and get people onto it. In China, they've been pilot projecting that, running a pilot project with their digital yuan for during COVID, couldn't get that to work either. Really, the uptake is very low because culturally it's just a non-starter, certainly for the Chinese. So people are not dumb, you know, and I think our, you know, our, these oligarchs really do think we are dumb. and they think they're a lot smarter than we are, and that we just deserve to be led by them. You know, I honestly do believe that they have this. They all sound like, at the end of the day, Yuval Harari, right? They just don't all want to admit it. They try and put a better spin on it. That guy's just like openly evil, because he has, his disdain for humanity is so, you know, complete. But there it is. So I know it's not going to happen here in the United States. I know they want it in Europe, and they may actually even try and pull it off. But I think other forces will tear it apart as quickly as it's, you know, put in place.
And she's got a few more questions. You know, some of this financial stuff goes a bit over my head, and you're more expert on that. She asks, Catherine Austin Fitz says we are at risk for a deflationary event. And she says, in parentheses, I believe, if I am understanding her correctly, presuming from excess death and declining birth rates, do you feel this is the case? And what would that mean for the U.S. economically, also the globe, if they're encountering this?
Well, the Powell is engendering deflation. He's shrinking the Fed's balance sheet by $95 billion a month and raising interest rates at the same time. He's shrinking the offshore dollar markets. And as though that money comes back home, he's just you know, retiring. So, yeah, there is a deflationary impulse happening now. At the same time, we're having commodity inflation because of a cost push variety, not a demand pull. Meaning, we don't have a roaring economy pulling prices higher. We have, you know, not enough goods being chased by still by too much money. Okay, so because supply chains are still a little broken, and you know, and commodity producers are getting squeezed by high input costs, and you know, and there's not a lot of money flowing around, so it's like, but at the same time, everybody still needs this stuff, so they're cutting back on production, while at the same time people are, you know, I mean, like, so every, you know, it's a mess. And cost push inflation is the kind that the Fed can't solve with interest rates. And I think I, you know, and Catherine's not wrong about these things, but at the same time, you're also fighting the loss of institutional confidence, which is the path towards hyperinflation. Right. And currencies don't hyperinflate because we print too much money. They hyperinflate because they print too much money too fast, and people lose confidence in the political structure that's supposed to maintain all of this, the institutional structure that's supposed to maintain all of this. And that's the third type of inflation. And I think that these two things are right now fighting each other. You know, you've got the deflationary impulse of the Fed trying to get rid of all this money that was printed during COVID, and you've got inflationary pressures as the world de-dollarizes overseas. Again, another reason I keep saying, I just don't see how the Fed can pivot and go back to the zero bound. I think everybody who keeps arguing for this is just wants to be right and refuses to think it through as to why the Fed can't do this unless the Fed wants to kill itself. And back to the zero bound would be the end of it.
Real quick, we got about 2.5 minutes left. Sure. Again, she says, thank you guys so much for being truth tellers and for helping us all try to figure out what's going on and what has been going on. And thank you for listening and supporting us. Just a real quick, you know, I was going to vote either for Afroman or John Bolton just to accelerate things. But we got Biden, Trump, possibly DeSantis. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. might be running. That'd be the first time I might ever vote Democrat. I mean, which is completely wild. Any thoughts you know, on the road ahead and elections, and or final thought for us?
I want DeSantis to stay where he is. I think he's being puffed up by the wrong people. I think Soros is working overtime to puff him up and make him think that he's a more viable candidate than he is at a national level. The other side, I also don't believe this fight between Trump and DeSantis. I don't buy it. This looks like a WWE script to me. I think DeSantis needs to stay in Florida and finish the job that he started, shoring up the state and the region in order to you know, protect us, and in case things do go crazy, in case they do try to tear the world down, right? Something has to be a safe haven for global capital in the West, or, you know, for capital in the West, some place has to be a safe haven. Okay. And it certainly doesn't, not going to be Europe, and it's not going to be DC, and it's not going to be New York, and it's not going to be California. So I would prefer that to be Florida. Jamie Dimon came out to say, well, we love Florida. I'm like, yeah, I know you do, because I also know that, you know, South Florida is going to become the new Wall Street. So In 10 years, South Florida will be the new Wall Street.
Yeah, it's he tweeted out yesterday, DeSantis, Florida broke visitation records with more than 137.6 million visitors last year, in spite of Biden's unscientific vax mandate. 40 this. Seconds left. We don't have time to ask about prepping, but all you need is gold, goats, and guns. Where's the best place to find you and get your newsletter?
TomLuongo.me is the, as you've said before, TomLuongo.me is the blog. TFL1728 is the thoroughly obnoxious Twitter feed. And Patreon.com/GoldGoatsAndGuns if you want to sign up for all the stuff that's behind the paywall, which of which there is a lot. I produce for my patrons four to five times a week. So
always great to get Tom's insights, and I'm following you on the socials as well, and your interviews and podcasts. Keep up the great work. I'm signing off. You know, everyone else, keep on rocking.